to introduce the speaker. How about that? Hardy is my grand sponsor. Hardy at one point was my sponsor, but yeah. I needed it toned down a little bit. So I went to the next best thing. So I'm going to have Hardy come up and introduce the speaker. Thank you.
I'm an addict. My name is Hardy. Damn, it's good to be home. I tell you, it's good to see so many familiar faces. And some of you bastards got old. Oh, I hope this young lady can sign Yiddish because Mikey gets a little nervous. I've been sponsoring Mikey for about 21, 22 years. And when Mikey had about 5 years clean, we were in one of our Get Honest to Die retreats. It might have been an Iowa or in that cornhole in South Carolina, Winsboro. And Mikey came up to me and he said, you know, I've been around for four or five years now, and everybody here has sponsees. Why don't I have any sponsees? And I said, well, Mikey, in the program it talks about attraction rather than promotion. So if you look in the sponsorship guide, it talks about how we go about choosing a sponsor. We find somebody that we have something in common with, firstly, and then we observe how they work their program. That's attraction. Now, sure enough, some people depend on promotion. You heard people tell you, so-and-so sponsors me and he's got X amount of clean time. You know, like that's gonna keep you clean. Bullshit. The 12th tradition talks about it's not the messenger that keeps us clean, it's the message. So fast forward till about 5 or 6 years ago, and we got our sponsorship breakfast. We're over at Golden Corral eating grease and shit we ain't supposed to. Mikey is lactose intolerant, he knows that, but he keeps on eating them damn cheese omelets. So we usually get run out of the place pretty soon. So walking out the meeting, Mikey looks around and he goes, hey, you realize there are about 30, 35 of us there. You realize that I sponsor half the people in this room. He said, they're all fucked up. He said, fakakta. He said, especially that Meshuggah Julia. He said, what, I got a sign on my back? How'd I get all these six son of a bitches here? So I took him under my wing and I said, Mikey, my son, remember what I told you a long time ago? Attraction rather than promotion. With that, I give you a man who's not too physically attractive, but his program is. My sponsee, my friend, Mike King.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, I'm Mike. I'm an addict. Fucker always steals my material. I bought some books. I'm your out-of-town speaker from Katy. By the way. I keep hearing people say, well, you know, you've been around, but we don't know you. Well, that's unfortunate. If I offend anybody by my language or my sense of humor, talk to your sponsor. Because I don't make apologies for the way that I communicate. For some reason, beyond my comprehension, the committee asked me to come up here and do this. I don't have a fucking clue why, but they did. Usually I'm asked to speak many miles from Houston. I have spoken at conventions in other states, but rarely am I asked to speak on my own turf. In fact, I think the last time I had 6 years clean and I spoke at a Chance for Freedom out of the Spencer Highway. And I think that was the last time anybody asked me to speak locally other than at my own home group, which happens to be the Phoenix Group where I've been for the last 23 plus years. The Phoenix Group is probably the worst group in Houston. And I'll tell you why, because we have a lot of fun getting to the message and getting to recovery. So we have a lot of fun over there. I'm humbled to be up here because, you know, I believe in the equality of addicts and the anonymity of this program. I believe in spiritual anonymity. I believe in doing things and not seeking recognition for it, right? And any one of you is qualified to come up here and do what the fuck I'm doing right now, and maybe one day you'll have your opportunity, but just because I'm up here doesn't mean I am any different than any one of you. And earlier today, I was at the old timers panel, and any of them could probably do a better job than me. Well, maybe not all of them. There's maybe one or two that could. There's an announcement from security for the older people here. Do not take the purple stool softener. It's bootleg. It's gonna fuck your shit up. So it's a lot of old people here. So just, you know, don't get confused. If you gotta go to the bathroom or something, I speak quickly. I'll probably get my message over quickly. So if you go to the bathroom and you come back and the room is empty, that's too bad, okay? As introduction, and I have some literature I'm gonna refer to. I'll try not to read a whole lot of literature, but I think our literature is pretty damn important. You know, to kind of introduce myself, who am I? I'm an addict. My clean date is 10/21/95. So I've been around the rooms for a while. Clean time does not equal recovery, okay? So I say that because, you know, I am grateful for my clean date and I haven't had to change it in a long time. I had to change it a lot in 1995, but I haven't had to change it since October 21st of 1995. For that, I'm truly grateful. A lot has to do with the sponsorship that I have from Hardy and from my sponsorship family being plugged into the message of recovery. So that's, you know, and I'm gonna go into a little bit later, a little bit more who I am, okay? And I'm an addict, and why am I an addict? You know, we spend a lot of time in the rooms boo-hooing and talking about our past and this, why I'm an addict, why I'm here. Well, there's a real simple answer. I like to keep shit simple. This is about solutions, right? That's what we're talking about in this convention is solutions. There's a lot of solutions in our literature. So the reason that I am an addict is very simple. There's a book here that's really cool. It's called The Narcotics Anonymous Step Working Guide. And if you have an NA sponsor, you can start working steps of the Step Working Guide. And you don't even have to go very far. You just have to go to the first page. Page one, what makes us addicts is a disease of addiction. Not the drugs, not our behavior, but our disease, okay? There is something within us that makes us unable to control our use of drugs. This same something also makes us prone to obsession and compulsion in other areas of our lives. Okay? That's why I'm an addict. I have the disease of addiction, and that's a key to my recovery. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, too. So, what am I? I'll tell you what I am. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And if we ever get lost as to what that means, I want to read this. Tradition 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Okay? No one else can judge my desire. I'm the only one who can judge my desire. I'm the only one who can declare myself to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. So that means that people can come to Narcotics Anonymous meetings and not necessarily be members, right? If they don't have the desire, they're not members. But we're members when we say we are. Okay? When we say, and we talk about that, but what does that really mean? And I get concerned over time because I see that that tradition is getting watered down, and when it gets watered down, then we lose our purpose of recovery. And it reminds me in the literature, and I'm going to read this right here, because I came into the rooms for one purpose. I didn't come for my 401k, right? I didn't come to get a new car. I didn't come to better job. I came seeking a way to fucking put the dope down. Maybe 5 minutes at a time. Just to get a little relief. That's what brought me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And if we're not talking about that shit, then what are we? This is Narcotics Anonymous. We're a fellowship in our own right. And it says here, although the third tradition is written simply, we know that when it talks about a desire to stop using, it means using drugs. We understand that NA is a program of recovery for drug addicts. Although addiction takes on a broader meaning for many of us as we continue in recovery, it's important to remember that we first came to NA because of our drug problems. If new members are to feel that they belong in NA, they need to hear something they can identify with. They find that identification in the fellowship of recovering addicts in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if we don't talk about the dope, then where the fuck are you supposed to talk about the dope if you can't talk about it in fucking Narcotics Anonymous? And how is a newcomer supposed to have identification with us in Narcotics Anonymous if we can't share that? And I know that as we get further in our recovery, using takes on other meanings, right? Because the definition of using means to exploit selfishly. So I can exploit selfishly other shit other than drugs, and I learn that obsession and compulsion will come up in other aspects of my life, but I need to remember that if I don't think that the drugs brought me in there, I will go back to the drugs. Because I'll get myself back in a corner where I think the drugs are the only solution. It says in the literature, in recovery and relapse, old timers forget that it starts with the first one. So after years clean, if I don't remember why the fuck I'm in here, and I'm thinking, oh, it wasn't that bad, I could be in a position where I think, okay, I can do one. That disease starts with the first one. Because I have an allergic reaction to drugs. It tells me in the basic text. We have a basic text. They call it a text because it's supposed to be studied. So that's kind of who I am, what I am, and why I'm here. So I want to tell you a little story to kind of put everything in perspective as to my own recovery and my own journey, which hasn't always been smooth. And My son lives in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm up in Brooklyn recently. This is a true story. I'm up in Brooklyn. And he's at work. So I'm killing time. So I go to an antique store. I go to the antique store. And in the back of the antique store, there is a lantern, like in Arabian Nights. A beautiful lantern. So I take out my handkerchief. I rub the lantern. A genie pops out. Genie pops out of the lantern. And he says, I'm a genie, and I will grant you one wish, anything that you want. Well, I just happen to have my basic text with me. Okay. And I said, genie, this is a book that has been written about recovery from the disease of addiction, this terrible disease. And my wish to you is to eradicate the disease of addiction. Genie sits back. He says, wow. He says, you know, I'm just a regular antique store genie. You know, I can only do some things. He says, do you have a simpler request? that I could grant? I said, okay. I said, listen, I've been married 30 years to the same woman. I can't get her to give me a blowjob. I said, will you please get my wife to give me a blowjob? Jeannie says, can I see that book again? And I tell you that's a true story. I didn't get either thing. I didn't get the blowjob, but we still have the disease in it. Didn't buy the lantern either. You know, and I tell you that because it's kind of a lesson of acceptance. I need to accept life on life's terms, not what I expect it to be. Okay? And so my story is, and I'm not going to bore you with a lot of war details, but there is one thing about my use that I guarantee not one of you fuckers did. Did any of you smoke cat litter? Oh, we got one in the back. Okay. I thought, there's one over there. Okay, yeah. I take it back. There's a few of us. We may have to have a side meeting of Cat Litter Anonymous. You see, when my addiction drove me, I got to remember that my act of addiction started at Farmore. You remember Farmore, the discount pharmacy that was over on 59? They didn't fucking care if it was 30 days or 15 days since your prescription was refilled. And they really didn't look that closely at the signature. And they were there to make money, and they fucking filled those prescriptions. And I had Dr. Feelgood, right, down at the medical center, I'd go in there with my bad back, and he would say, is 500 Vicodins good for the month? I said, well, for the week. I love those things. Those are like Skittles, man. But I got to remember, at the end of my active using, I ended up in my bathroom by myself. And on the floor of that bathroom is where we kept the cat box. And there's a certain substance, if you're familiar with Chore Boy, there's a certain substance that has an amazing resemblance to cat litter. And if you're in the throes of active using and you drop some shit, it's going in the fucking pipe. So I cannot blame my elderly dementia on my genetics. I think it has something to do with cat litter. See, before I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, my story is different than yours, and I can't compete with you on your story. You can't compete with me. We are equal members. We have different paths that brought us to our knees. Some of us had terrible childhoods. Some of us did not. I got nothing to complain about. Everything that I ever lost, I gave away. Okay? I fucking gave it away. So before I came into the rooms, I'd already been to college, I got a law degree, I was successful in my career, I had the wife and the kids, right? Made a lot of money, was doing pretty fucking good. This was before I came here, okay? This was before I came here. That's my story. And what happened, just like anybody else's story, once that allergic reaction took place, that chemistry took place in my body, there are three aspects of this disease: physical, mental, and spiritual, right? So I was totally obsessed with the drugs. I was under total compulsion to get more drugs and lived under the cloud of total self-centeredness, to the exclusion of the goodwill or anything else around me. Career, all of that, family, friends, we talk about it, until it brought me to my knees. But even then, I was in denial, because you see, this is a funny disease and it's a funny recovery, because this is not a recovery of the intellect, this is a recovery of the heart. And if I look at it from an intellectual point of view, I will talk myself out of this room and go get one. I will fucking go out there and go get one. This is not for me to understand, but to take suggestions and follow them. It took me a while to figure that out. So by the time I got down to the very end, and I'm looking like a fucking ghost in a 36 regular suit, I'm over there on 10,000 Memorial Drive, where my office is, riding up the elevator with the former president of the fucking United States and the Secret Service, caring shit. This is the insanity of it all, because none of this matters. None of that fucking matters except getting loaded. Except getting loaded. Got to the point, I was in such denial, I remember, you know, you're cute at the beginning, right? You hide shit. So I'm hiding shit here, and I hide shit here in the house so that nobody knows. My wife at the time had absolutely no idea. I guess she thought I'd just gotten out of a concentration camp. I don't know what's going through her head, but I remember, and so the way that I hid the dope in the house is, you know, I had to make it closer and closer and closer, because I wanted it like this. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go over to my friend Steve's house, and his father, he smoked Camel cigarettes. He loved fucking Camels. So every Sunday, he'd go buy a carton of cigarettes. And in every room in the house, including in the kids' rooms, he had an ashtray and a lighter and a pack of cigarettes. So no matter where he was, he could grab a pack of cigarettes. Okay? Well, that's how I got with the dope. So I've now got all this dope, and it's in the robe that I wear around the house. And my wife puts on my robe and sticks her hands in there, right? Pulls it out, and I deny that it's mine. Honey, I don't know. It's the neighbors. Fucker was over here wearing my robe yesterday. And for a second, I think she believed it. Because my conduct was so shocking that even I didn't believe it. Do you remember those days where you can't even fucking believe what you did and that you were doing it? And you look back at it and you think, my God, that's a different person. But that's my story, and I better fucking remember it, because if I don't, I'm gonna repeat it. I'm gonna go back there. So the genie story that I like to tell, I can accept the fact that I have a drug problem. I can accept the fact maybe that I'm an addict and suffer from obsessive compulsive behavior, but I can't seem to accept the fact that there is a solution that requires my action and commitment. And it tells us what the solution is. Okay? So I'm going to read it so that there's no confusion. It's here in the basic text. As a result of attending a few meetings, we begin to feel like we finally belong somewhere. It is in these meetings that we are introduced to the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. We learn to work the steps in the order that they are written and to use them on a daily basis. Okay, I got a sponsee that likes to say before he gives the big line, this is the money shot. He's out here somewhere hiding. The steps are our solution. They are our survival kit. They are our defense against addiction, which is a deadly disease. Our steps are the principles that make our recovery possible. It's about solutions, right? There it is, 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. But when I got clean and came out of treatment, you see, I'm too fucking smart. I got all these degrees on the wall. And by this point, I had given away the money, I had given away the property, I had given away all these things, and I thought the thing that I need to do is replace all of these things, and that'll mean that I'm okay, right? So I went out and fucking worked like a mad dog and tried to put the money back in the bank and get the job and all this. I went to meetings, I hung out, I pretended that I was doing steps. Did you ever pretend that you were doing steps? Come on, be honest. Oh yeah, step eight's a good one. What the fuck is step eight? Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, let's talk about steps. It takes a lot of work to pretend to do that, to live that fucking lie. And what I forgot, and it tells us right in step one, so I don't have to go very far to figure this out. So social acceptability does not equal recovery. That's got nothing to do with fucking recovery. This is an inside job. Okay, I can do all that shit. I can get the money back. I can get the job back. I can do all those things and think that I'm back to where I was. And what I did was I switched that obsession and compulsion from getting loaded to rebuilding what I thought I needed. And what happened was I got divorced clean. Not using. I got divorced clean. I was out to lunch. And I remember thinking, okay, we talk about it in the rooms, with or without drugs. Okay, I've had my back against the wall with drugs. Now I got my back against the wall without drugs. Well, my story with Hardy over here, my sponsor for the last 20-some years, I first met him in a CA meeting that we used to have out on the west side of town. And I went up to him after that first meeting and I said, will you be my sponsor? And he said, yes. And so the next day or something, I called and he didn't answer the phone and I said, well, fuck him. Motherfucker doesn't answer the phone. Do they know who I am? So I got another sponsor. And I got another sponsor. And I got another sponsor. And what I was trying to do, because I was ruled by intellect, was I didn't want to do this fucking work. I didn't feel like I needed to do any of this work. I got a fucking law degree. I went to college for 7 fucking years. I don't need this. So I deliberately hid out in the rooms and chose sponsors who would not challenge me. I chose sponsors who were not doing steps. And they were as batshit crazy as I was. Because there was no recovery going on in there. And I made that transition from CA to NA, because in CA they have a book that's big. And every time I tried to read that book, I always ended up on that page where they're like riding their fucking bicycles around the countryside in 1936. And I'm scratching my head, thinking, what does this have to do with crack? This is some boring ass shit. I remember I had this sponsor in CA and pretending to do steps. And he says, okay, we're going to do the third step and the fourth step together. And the third step, you're going to get on your knees. With you? Oh, well, this is a fucked up fellowship. They don't even have their own book. And even though in my mind I'm thinking, okay, well, crack took me over the edge, it started at Farmore. It doesn't matter what the substance was. I just substituted one for another and kept graduating. I'd forgotten that. So I'm hiding out with crackheads thinking that's all I got to do is put down the crack and everything's going to be cool. So after, I don't know, 4 years or so of now, 4 or 5 years, my memory, like I said, smoke cat litter, not doing any fucking steps. I come up to a meeting at the Phoenix Group. The Phoenix Group was born out of the ashes of a CA group. And we started that meeting 20-some years ago. And I went up to that meeting, and I'm riding home, and I'm thinking, I don't think I've ever been so fucking miserable in my life. I get up there, and I don't have any joy in my heart, no love of self. I am still in self-loathing. I am still in self-pity. And I haven't done any drugs in over 4 or 5 years. So I thought, well, I still got that asshole's number. So I'm riding home, and I call him. This is so long ago, it was landlines. So I call Hardy, and I say, man, I need to do something different. And he says, well, let's start working steps tomorrow. And that's what we did, and it changed my life. And that changed my life. Because it was a process. Because I still wanted to whine and cry and be in self-pity and be a victim. And his wife used to say, Mary used to say, we always know when Mikey is calling because the phone doesn't ring, it whines. Mike's on the phone again. And one thing that has been consistent about my sponsor, and thank God for sponsorship, you know, that's like so fucking important. And it tells you in the step working guide that there's only one way to do the steps wrong, and that's by yourself. It tells you in the Roman numerals, get a fucking sponsor and do it with a sponsor and take it. Otherwise, you're delusional, right? And what I love about my sponsor that has been consistent through the years is he doesn't let me bitch. He doesn't let me sit in self-pity. He will interrupt me after 30 seconds and tell me to shut the fuck up and let's get in the solution. Get in the solution. You see, this is about growing up. This is about owning my part. This is about taking responsibility. This is about not being a victim anymore. This is about taking an interest in my own life, because this is not a fucking game. This is my life. So what am I doing? You know, it says in the 12th step, as a result of these steps, I have a spiritual awakening. It doesn't say as a result of jerking off. Right? It doesn't say as a result of avoiding these steps. It says as a result of these steps. So I have to come to the conclusion that I am in a 12-step program. I better do the 12 steps. Let me put it to you this way. Have you ever gone to a Chinese buffet and all you do is get a glass of water and you go sit down? And then you pay the bill when you left and somebody asks you, well, how was the food? Well, I don't know. I didn't fucking eat anything. I just drank water. What the are you doing in a Chinese buffet if all you're going to do is drink water? But what the fuck are you doing in a 12-step program if you're not going to do the steps? Masturbation gets boring. After a while, you want to play with other people. Right? So, I started a journey of doing the steps. I don't know how the steps work. I don't know why the steps work. But I'll tell you this. Once I start to admit my powerlessness in the first step and admit that my life is unmanageable, okay, then I am open to a solution. Okay. So by the time I get to the second step, I start to get some hope that I can be restored to sanity. And the first indication before I dress this shit up later on in years, well, here's an indication of my insanity. I sold Pfizer and I bought Johnson & Johnson stock. Give me a fucking break. It says in the literature, I'm insane because I use dope. That is the first indication of my insanity. And this process that I am accumulating my own evidence on that works in that second step, I start to gain my own evidence that I can be restored to sanity with belief in a power greater than myself. And this is my own personal thing, because that power greater than myself can be anything that I want it to be. There are no catches on that. And it says in the step working guide in the 11th step, it says clearly there is no approved spiritual path in Narcotics Anonymous. And if anybody tells you different, they are simply wrong. So that spiritual path and that development of my power greater than myself is strictly my business and nobody else's. All I need is somebody or something that can restore me to sanity. That's all it's asking there in the second step. And I'm going to throw this out too, because this bugs me sometimes. It's totally up to me what that higher power is. So when you come into a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, please do not name your higher power. Okay? If you have a religious higher power, that is your business, and that you are allowed to do that. Or if you have another name. But once you bring the name of a higher power into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and name that power, you are putting that power in competition with everybody else's higher power. All of a sudden, our gods are competing, right? It also says no endorsement. We don't endorse any spiritual path. It is open to all of us. It is totally of your choosing. So you can do and believe whatever you want. That's fine. You know, that's fine. So when I do that second step and I get some hope, and faith turns to hope and hope turns to action, by the time I get to the third step, I have an instrument beyond belief to conduct my daily life. This is the gifts of Narcotics Anonymous in the 12 steps. Do you know that, do you want to revolutionize your life? Revolutionize your life. You know, the literature says that the third step will revolutionize your life. Revolutionize. It says in the third step that taking the third step decision may be the most momentous decision that you make in your entire life. Now, why is that? Because I'm making a decision, right, to turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power, of a power greater than myself, of a God of my understanding. All of a sudden, I've spun the whole dial. You see, I forgot when I was out there in that 4 or 5 year journey that I could put down the dope and the physical obsession and compulsion would abate, but the spiritual self-centeredness would not, until I treated it with the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And by the time I come to the third step, that self-centeredness comes face to face with that revolutionary idea that I can spin this whole fucker around and live in God's will and not my own. And that changes everything. Well, that takes all the pressure off, doesn't it? That takes all the pressure off, because I don't have to manipulate. I don't have to scheme anymore. All that is required of me is to do the best that I can with what I have and turn the results over to the care of a power greater than myself. Now, what does care mean? And that gets screwed up too. I do not believe in a program of predetermination. I do not believe that my life is predetermined. Narcotics Anonymous requires action on my part. And the benefits that I receive in Narcotics Anonymous 12 Steps is directly related to the work that I put in it. And if I don't put any work in it, I'm not going to get any benefit. But just because I'm an addict and I'm in recovery and I practice the 12 steps doesn't mean that shit don't happen. Because shit's going to happen. This is life on life's terms. I could get sick. I'm going to share on that in a minute. My wife could leave. I could go broke. All sorts of things. It doesn't mean it's not childlike in that by doing this step, God is going to put me in his arms and make sure that nothing bad ever happens to me. But what it means is that he will take care of me spiritually. So no matter what the fuck happens to me, I don't have to resort to using dope. I don't have to go back to getting loaded. That no matter what the news is, I will be spiritually fit to the point that I don't have to go get loaded. That's quite a blessing, isn't it? Because we talk about blessings. So when somebody gets sick, two people get sick, one person gets cured and the other person dies, does that mean the person who died isn't blessed? No. When somebody's home gets flooded by Harvey and the other person's home does that mean the guy who got flooded isn't blessed? And I'm supposed to come in here and say, well, I'm blessed because my home didn't get flooded. Get the fuck out of here, man. That's not what that means at all. That's not what this means. This isn't going to protect you from that. So my own personal experience after years, and fast forward a little bit, recently I was going to go on this cruise with my wife. We were going to go to the Caribbean. And we're in Florida. We're going to be on a boat in a few days. And I go to the toilet. And I urinate. And I knew I didn't drink any Hawaiian punch that day. But yet the color in the bowl is distinctly an unnatural color. So what do? I flush it and say, fuck it. 2 hours later, I go back to the bathroom, the same thing happens. Well, now this is becoming a little concerning. I'm not in any pain, but something is going on with my body, and I have a choice to either deal with it or not. So I tell my wife what's going on, so she says, well, you got to go down to the dock in the box. So I go down to the dock in the box, and there's this doctor there. He's all sweating, he's nervous, and he's working at a dock in the box. He's probably graduated last in his class. And he says, well, this isn't normal. Really? Okay. Thanks. He says, what you need to do is you need to go see a urologist. So I make an appointment. We're in another town. I make an appointment to go to this urologist. And I'm sitting there in the waiting room. And first thing I notice is I'm like the youngest man there. By the way, today's my birthday. I'm 66 years old today. So last year at the age of 65, I'm the youngest man in the fucking urology waiting room. And he brings me in there and I go back to see Dr. Tingle was his name. I'm not kidding. And I can make a suggestion. If you ever have to go to a urologist, look at his hands first. Okay? You want a urologist who has hands like a piano player, not a lumberjack. This guy was a lumberjack. In 5 minutes, he's given me more attention than my wife has given me in the last 6 months. And he says to me, he says, okay, well, we're going to have to do this test. It's called a cystoscopy. And what we do is we put a needle down there and we look around. And I said, okay. And he says, we can do it one of two ways. tell me. He says, well, the first way we can do it, he says, we can do it right now in the room. He says, there's some stirrups. We can do it right now. It takes about 15 minutes. It's a little uncomfortable. I said, well, what's the other way to do it? He says, we'll put you in the hospital, knock your ass out, and you won't feel a thing. I said, hospital. There's a reason I'm telling you this story, by the way. So I get to the hospital, and this is an outpatient deal. And no, I'm sorry, I've missed a part. He sends me for a CT scan of the kidneys before I go into the hospital. And my insides are screwed up. Somehow, instead of having two kidneys, I was born with one gigantic kidney. And you see, when I was in the womb, God asked me if I needed anything, and I said I'd like one gigantic organ, but I was not specific. So I end up with this one gigantic kidney, which really excites urologists. They love to see it because they always say, if I take a picture of your kidney, can I keep it? You know, you want me to sign it? So anyway, so I get the CAT scan done and I'm supposed to go in the hospital the following week. Instead, that day I get a call from his office, from Dr. Tingle's office. And it's the nurse and she says, can you come in today and bring your wife? Well, that's not good. So I come in, bring my wife, and they say, well, he says, the game plan has changed. He says, we see a mass on your kidney. And we're gonna have to do more than just play around there in your little bladder. We're gonna go all the way in and go up to your kidney and we're gonna look around. And you don't have any choice in the matter because for you, kidney cancer is a death sentence. I can't have a transplant. So I go into the hospital and they have this, there's this Nazi technique called a ureteroscopy. And not only, I learned so much that, see, my bladder is connected to my kidneys through my ureters, and they're all fucked up too. So Dr. Tingle is in there having something that's supposed to take 5 minutes, ends up taking a couple hours, and what ends up is supposed to be a day procedure turns into me being in the hospital for a week. And I was in the worst pain that you can imagine. And here I was confronted, and I've been lucky, because there's a lot of people in Narcotics Anonymous who have to deal with chronic pain. And we have a lot of literature on that, and have to take painkillers on a regular basis. And I've been blessed up to this point that I didn't have to do that, but I'm in dire pain, and I've got a nurse who looks like June Cleaver who wants to give me Dilaudid. And I need it, and I take it, and I take it. And after about 3 or 4 days of being in the hospital, Dr. Tingle, who has no bedside manner, says, okay, well now this doesn't seem to be working, so we're gonna put a catheter in, and we're gonna go from there. And so you're laying there like a hunk of meat, and he takes the catheter kit out of the box and he's laying it on my chest. You know how like you go to the dentist and they just treat you and they lay this shit on you? Like you don't see these implements of torture? And so he's laying this shit on my chest and I'm screaming and he says, Mr. Kaplan, I haven't even touched you yet. I said, I know that. Anyway, he goes in there, he does what he needs to do, I get some relief. 2 hours later, here comes Nurse Cleaver. And I have a decision to make because Nurse Cleaver is now my dealer. And she's got Dilaudid for the asking. And I have to really think about the pain. And if I hadn't learned a few things in Narcotics Anonymous, I would have taken that next shot and the next shot and the next shot and gone home with a big fucking jar of pills. But it tells me in the literature that my body does not know the difference. I'm an addict with an allergic reaction to drugs, and when I put drugs in my system, my body does not know what else is going on, okay? Does not rationalize it and say, it's okay, I'm gonna get, my addiction is gonna be in full circle again. The literature says it starts with the first one. It starts with the first one. And so I told her, no. And she looks at me, and so she comes back later and she says, well, here's some Vicodin. Okay, now me and Vicodin had a real love affair at one time. Like I said, I ate them like Skittles and Tic Tacs. And I said, I don't want anything but aspirin. She says, nobody goes from Dilaudid to aspirin. I said, an addict does. And I did. But you know what saved my ass in there? Because there are brave, courageous people in this room who are going through similar shit right now, who are facing these types of issues right now. We're talking about that third step, right? Okay. I go back to the third step. And it says here, because we got some great fucking literature, right? Living Clean says, when something is going on with our health, we have a choice to accept what is happening and deal with it, or pretend it is not there. A great deal of the time we choose to ignore what we know, either because we are afraid or because we don't want to hassle with it. For some of us, the fear of undergoing medical treatment is understandable. Turning something over is not the same as ignoring it. When we take action and leave the results to a power greater than ourselves, we are turning it over. However, when we don't take responsibility for our part, but wait for a magical answer, we are not working the third step. We are being irresponsible. Faith is not the same as wishing. That's some pretty heavy shit. So that gave me courage. That gave me courage to go to the urologist. That gave me courage to go through the ureteroscopy. That gave me courage for the fucking catheter. That gave me courage to go up there and deal with all these issues. And it tells me here in the step working guide, all right, it says, as our understanding of a higher power grows and evolves, we'll find that we react differently to what goes on in our lives. We may find ourselves able to courageously face situations that used to strike fear in our hearts. That was a situation that struck fear in my heart, but I had the courage to go through with it because I knew from experience that I would be taken care of spiritually no matter what the hell happened to my physical body. And that's a blessing. Because I thought the only way I could take care of the spiritual side of me was getting loaded. So, I went through all that experience, and I'm happy to say that the mass went away, they took care of it, and I'm free from that. Does that mean I'm blessed? No, just lucky. Just lucky. So, where does that leave me today? What is my purpose in life? I've gone through all this. I've been clean for 23 plus years. I'm 66 years old. I keep coming to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because this shit works and has given me a life that I never thought possible. And so, the third step, the solutions are in the steps. It tells me, so the third step is the ground floor for when I get to the 11th step. And I'm not sure if I come up with this shit or if my sponsor comes up with this shit, because he likes to steal my stuff. And I steal his stuff, right? So by the time I get to the 11th step, I gain some power. It says I am powerless over my addiction. It doesn't say that I'm powerless over making good choices. It doesn't say that I'm powerless over coming to a meeting or doing steps. It says I'm powerless over my addiction. This requires me to take action. So by the time I get to the 11th step and I acknowledge the existence of my higher power through prayer and meditation, which that method is completely up to me, then I gain the ability and the power to carry out God's will and not my will, which generally means two things to me. It means acting on spiritual principles, even when I'm alone with my wife and I don't want to. It's kind of hard sometimes to take those spiritual principles in our most intimate relationships. But that's the test, isn't it? And we give verbiage to the serenity prayer before every meeting, but how do you get that? Okay, the steps get you there. Serenity comes by practicing the 10th step. Reduces drama in my life. Courage comes from practicing the 3rd step, my reliance on my higher power. Okay, the wisdom comes in the 11th and the 12th steps as a result of a spiritual awakening. There's the answer. There's the answer. So by the time I get to the 11th step, I have to act on spiritual principles whether I want to or not. And here's the kicker, is that happiness and recovery is up to me. This is a choice that I can make. I can be in recovery and be miserable. Or I can have clean time does not equal recovery. I can have a lot of years and have no recovery and be an unhappy son of a bitch. My grand sponsor says you can find them in the rooms because they are the talking dead, not the walking dead. The talking dead, you've seen them. So this tells me that happiness is my choice, and sometimes, you know, I'm an addict, sometimes happiness is a challenge to me. I was down for so long, I am comfortable in self-pity. I am comfortable being down. But I can't stay there very long. I mean, life is short. I'm 66 years old. I got a fucking expiration date. I mean, what, I'm going to lay on my deathbed and wish that I had done this or done that or been happier? No, the choice is mine, and it tells me right here, this is great, here in Living Clean. It says, some of us struggle to give ourselves permission to be happy. We may not think we deserve it, or we may fear that we will stop working on ourselves. Some of us have been unhappy for so long that it feels uncomfortable to let go of our bitterness. When we treat happiness as a spiritual principle, 11th step, we can see its relationship to humility. Our ability to enjoy our lives is directly related to our willingness to let go of our self-obsession. If we think of happiness as a spiritual asset, we could see it both as a gift and a goal. You know, this shit is all full of solutions. So where do we go from here, man? You know, my purpose here today was to try to carry the message the best that I could, the way that I see it, in my own experience, strength, and hope. That's all I can do. Now, where am I going from here? Well, I got a trip planned. I'm going to go to Antarctica at the end of the year. I'm going to go and I'm going to walk around these big fucking penguins on South George Island, and where they all, like 50,000 penguins, all shitting and pissing at the same time. And I'm going to walk around that, and, you know, I used to live in a bathroom. My world was so small, I don't want to go back to that world anymore. The Narcotics Anonymous has presented me with a world that is my choice. And what it has done is it delivered on our one promise, freedom from active addiction. It has delivered on that promise. So I'm going to close with this. I went back to Dr. Tingle's office for my last examination. Dr. Tingle wasn't there. He had a nurse assistant, a PA. And she said to me, she says, well, we have to tell you, Mr. Kaplan, you need to stop masturbating. And I said, why is that? She says, because I'm trying to examine you. I'm Mike, I'm an addict.